KNOM Update News. I'm Zachariah Hughes, and it's 9:02. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced yesterday it's sending Alaska $21 million in federal disaster funds for poor king salmon returns in three regions. The money covers government-declared disasters for the 2011 and 2012 Chinook runs in the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, plus the 2012 season in Cook Inlet. NOAA says it will disperse the money through the federal grant process for projects aimed at restoring the fishery, preventing a future disaster, or helping the fishing community. The funds are from a $75 million appropriation Congress approved last month for fisheries disasters nationwide. The Board of Education held a work session on Tuesday night at the Nome Elementary School to discuss next year's budget, and Nome appears not to be exempt from shrinking education funds that have made headlines around state media. School Board President Betsy Brennan says that upon reviewing new information on funding projections, the fiscal outlook isn't as good as many had hoped.
We didn't think we'd have to use a lot of the fund balance, and now we're looking at trying to maintain what we have now. We're looking at using a significant portion of our fund balance, and we're looking at ways how can we perhaps not use as many, much as dip into our savings as much.
The board plans to carry this year's fiscal budget over into FY15, but to do that, they'll have to fill a $274,000 gap, which they could do by dipping into the district's fund balance, its savings account basically, but they'd prefer not to. In order to mitigate deficit spending, Brennan says they're looking at fast ways to trim costs and get additional revenues without taking teachers out of the classroom.
How can we keep costs down and keep our student-teacher ratio at a good level and protect, you know, do what's right for our kids?
At its Tuesday work session, the board talked about staff reductions as a way of addressing the deficit that may include losing two classroom aides, moving a few school employees from full-time to part-time, and dropping a full-time administrative position from the district's office. Reductions in money for staff travel have also been proposed. Brennan is quick to explain, however, that nothing is yet set in stone and that setting the budget this year in particular is difficult because there are still so many factors at the state level that are unresolved.
We still have a lot of unknowns. We don't know with the governor's education bills and the legislature still in session till the end of April. We don't know what the final BSA is going to be. We don't know if there's going to be one-time funding, as we have in the last 2 years, for energy costs and one-time grants that helped us out in the past. And it's still very much up in the air with education funding.
Education has been the most contentious issue in this year's legislative session. The governor, in his budget, proposed a slight bump in the base student allocation rate, or BSA, but it was conditional. Senate Democrats are putting together their own education package, and none of it is likely to get resolved before the end of the legislative session on April 20th. That's a difficult timetable for the Board of Ed here in Nome because they're required to submit their own budget package to the city by May 1st. The board has taken a cautious approach to budgeting so far. That way, any extra funding will go towards chipping away at spending from the fund balance. The next Board of Education meeting is March 18th for more budget discussions, and the public is encouraged to attend. Managers at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game have extended two Yukon moose hunts by a month due to bad travel conditions. The new end of the Yukon hunt is March 31st. That's moved back from February 28th. Philip Perry is an area wildlife biologist for ADF&G.
Everybody that's been here this winter understands, you know, the lack of snow and at times lack of even ice for safe travel conditions has made it hard to get around. And you know, we have a healthy moose population up on the Yukon that can harvest a lot of moose. And understandably, the harvest this year has been pretty low.
The open areas are roughly from the mouth of the Yukon, north of the Kashunik River, up to Mountain Village. The remainder of Unit 18 goes up to the old village of Paimute. It includes coastal areas from Kuguillanuk up to Hooper Bay. It does not include the Kuskokwim drainage, however. The state does not get any real-time data on in season, as there's no immediate reporting requirement, but they do know enough to be able to make the emergency order.
Enforcement officers have been out and seen how many people are out hunting, and we're, you know, they're used to being seeing quite a few gut piles on some of the islands up on the Yukon where we have a lot of moose. Obviously, this year there's been a couple, so it's more, you know, we use the term anecdotal information, so it's kind of less formal ways to gather data. It's been a year that's people that normally would go harvest moose have not gone, and you know, myself included.
Managers estimate that Rather, managers estimate that there could be strong populations of up to 12,000 moose on the Yukon. Winter harvests have been between 150 and 200 moose over the past 5 years.
You know, it's obviously not even slowing down what we've seen for population growth. So, you know, it's an opportunity lost more than anything if we don't harvest moose. I don't think there's a immediate biological danger of not harvesting moose.
The Yukon winter season will be longer next year as well. The Board of Game extended the season next year to be open until mid-March. Perry's been trying to do an aerial survey to get data on the Kuskokwim moose population, but he needs a foot of snow to be able to accurately count moose. Ivory carving has long stood as a cornerstone of St. Lawrence Island, and yesterday, 10 Savunga students began a course to learn this traditional skill from one of the island's master carvers, Ben Pungawi. The 3-week course is through the University of Alaska Fairbanks and funded by a grant designed to perpetuate traditional native art forms into future generations. Ivory carving is not just part of the island's history, it's an essential component of the island's economy. Perry Pungawi, Savunga whaling captain, says 80 to 90% of Savunga's residents depend on ivory for income. So, the carving course is not just continuing an art form, but teaching a livelihood. Grail Brooks, who coordinated the class, says business development is one of the grant's goals. As part of the course, Kuwerik's Community Planning Development will instruct the students on how to join the Bering Straits Art Group and sell their work with consumers. Furthermore, after completing the course, the students will be able to keep their tools. Though Savunga mainly carves walrus ivory, the class will be using mammoth tusks. As a public institution, UAF cannot bar students from registering for a course, and under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, only Alaska Natives can carve or sell walrus tusks. Nevertheless, Brooks says carving skills are transferable from mammoth to walrus ivory. Cyclists have set new speed records in the Iditarod Trail Invitational. Smooth Trail is credited with helping athletes in the 350-mile human-powered race between Kinnick and McGrath. Kevin Breitenbach of Fairbanks pedaled his fat-tired bike into the Kuskokwim River village of McGrath Thursday night, capping a ride that shattered the previous Iditarod Trail Invitational record by over 14 hours. Breitenbach covered the 350-mile trail in 2 days, 4 hours, and 43 minutes, rolling over snow, ice, and dirt.
It was certainly fast, but it was exhausting. I've never ridden quite like that, just kind of a mouthful of dust the whole time. After a while, you're just kind of hoping for snow, something to slow you down.
Breitenbach says he was probably able to ride all but about a mile of the trail while sleeping under an hour and a half over 2+ days. Breitenbach traveled with Anchorage cyclist Tim Brenson and Massachusetts-based rider Alec Petro for much of the race. He says he tried to grab the lead at the 200-mile mark just after Roan, channeling the spirit of former Invitational champ, the late endurance iconoclast Rocky Riefenstahl of Fairbanks.
On the trail, I thought a lot about him, and it's just like, you know, when am I going to do something different? When am I going to try and do something bold?
Breitenbach made his move, but says it didn't last.
With no snow, I put a stick straight through my tire, and there went my lead.
Breitenbach says Birdston caught up and helped him fix the tire, and the race came down to the final 50 miles.
You know, at Nikolai, we just kind of looked at each other, and we knew it had to be a race, and you don't know how that's going to shake out.
It shook out with Breitenbach dropping Birdston and holding on over Smooth Trail into McGrath, edging him by 21 minutes. Petro was third, another 2 hours back. Much of the front of the pack surpassed the old speed record set in 2013, including the women's winner, Heather Best of Fairbanks, whose last invitational race ended with a scratch during a year of heavy snow.
You know, last time it was like the tale of two extreme years, but I just think it was virtually 100% rideable this year if you had the low enough gear and wanted to push it with your knees enough. And the warm temperatures, you know, you didn't really have to, like, worry about, like, keeping your face from freezing and just everything rolls better when the temperatures are quite a bit warmer like that.
Best says conditions did a lot to keep this year's Iditarod Trail Invitational from turning into the typical suffer fest. Only a few of the 54 cyclists and runners who started this year's race Sunday have scratched. Foot racers are also on track to break records. Several competitors plan to keep racing after McGrath, pushing on all the way to Nome and likely besting speed records for the 1,000-mile race. And a correction from Monday's broadcast. We reported that the Bering Straits Native Association had sent out $500 elder dividends last Friday, the 21st. In fact, checks will not be mailed until this Friday, February 28th. We apologize for the mix-up. Checking the price of gold in New York, it's up $4.40 to $13.34.20 an ounce. Silver's up 15 cents to $21.37, and zinc keeps edging higher at 94 cents a pound. Alaska Airlines Flight 152 is scheduled to arrive on time in Nome today at 11:40. Unofficially 32 degrees outside the KNOM studios 12 minutes after 9 o'clock.